Hi, everybody. Welcome to this early Sunday morning, everyone. I see a couple faces I know, and it's so nice to see all the faces I don't know. So it's wonderful. What a great fellowship. So today, I hope you're in the right place. We're here to talk about healing shame. And boy, that has been something that is one of my cores. And it was at so many different levels. And for me, shame was intergenerational, and that's the shame that came from my parents and poverty and their issues. And there was my own shame that I took on growing up poor. And we'll go into some of that. And but still, I don't think I knew that word. I don't believe I knew that word back then. But I better first qualify. I've been in program in OA for 16 plus years. I've been abstinent for most all that time, not from when I very first walked in the doors. And I am from the Philadelphia area intergroup region. And it took me a long time to get here. It took me a real long time to get to OA. I came in for a little while in the 90s. I had a sibling that came in, and that's how I'd heard about it. And of course, I didn't know what it meant, but I just knew he needed it, which is really funny because I didn't think I did. And part of my story is I am maintaining a 60 plus pound weight loss all this time. However, I was from a family where four of us took after my dad, who was thinner, and four took after my mom, who was heavy. And my one brother that told me about OA, he was one of the heavy ones. And but this disease is really scary in that one, my brother did end up basically dying from the disease, but he died of COVID this year being in a nursing home because of his disease. And me, I'm someone who I never got as heavy as he was, but I had the exact same disease he had. And it took, because I didn't look like him, I was in denial for a really, really long time. So I know I'll jump all over the place because this topic is kind of hard to talk about where I can keep it all together, but I think I qualified enough. So let's get back to healing shame. First, we have to know what it is. And what I like to do, if I'm doing a talk on a topic like this, I like to look up the word in the dictionary because it, and then you'll hear the words because they're so shocking and they seem so mean. And when I felt shame, I kind of felt like I was protecting myself in a way. You know, I'm just this innocent person and I just feel bad about what I'm doing. But words like contempt, humiliation, remorse, and there's all these other words that go with shame, mortification, the reproach, self-disgust, self-reproof, shamefacedness, things that words I may never have heard before, discredit, dishonor, and debase, degrade, ridicule. Now, as awful as those words sound, I talk that way to myself all the time. I used to all the time. And what's interesting, there's only a handful of words that are the opposite of shame. And all of them we can gain by working the 12 steps. All of them. Approval, esteem, honor, praise, respect, and pride. Wow. Six words. Right there. That all those words today I can say I have because I've worked this program. Because I've worked the 12 steps. And I do want to give you a little idea. Oh, the other thing I want to show you, I'm going to share my screen very quickly. And okay, my picture went away. I'm sorry. I do not see it. So I can't show you that picture of myself. I had it on my screen, but I don't want to play around and get myself disconnected. But just to give you an idea of what I looked like before. So the intergenerational shame, the first remembrance I have is shame. I remember being under the age of 5, and there's a curtain on our front door because the landlord took the curtain off. And the house that we were in went into foreclosure. So we were struggling financially from the time I was very little. And I got an education very early and hand-me-downs and things like that from the time, very, very young age. So I had that feeling that something's wrong, like I was embarrassed or I felt my parents' embarrassment. And I was one of 8 kids. So I was number 7 out of 8. So I was at the bottom of all of this. And there was an upper 4 of children and us lower 4. And notice I say lower 4. The upper 4, you know, we're so much older. My oldest sister is 20 years older than I am. And so, and they, because my mom was so busy, the older sisters were responsible for me. And so I didn't have that real connection or close connection. So I used sucking my thumb and rocking first as a means to soothe that hole, that huge gap of not having chaos and all these people around the house, and whether it was arguing or whatever was going on. And my parents would do things and go out and leave us with these people who at the time I thought were, wow, they're older. But as I worked the steps and dealt with a lot of it, I realized they were only young teenagers. You know, things like my sister taking me was responsible for me, but she crossed me across a 2-lane highway and this big street and left me there outside of the store and ran in the other side to be with her boyfriend. And the guy came out and crossed me back. At the time, I could have only been 3 or 4 years old. So I didn't have a lot of trust. I really gained, I had to be self-sufficient. And so all of these things, whether it's shame, self-sufficiency, breeds fear, you know, so the big ones that my core are fear and shame. So I had the intergenerational kind of shame, but then my mom died when I was 11. So, and we bottom 4 were the ones that were left at home, and we were 15, 14, 11, and 8. And she actually died. It was her anniversary this week, 54 years ago, she died. And my dad worked at night. So we were home a lot of times for a long time. We were home alone until people tried to start coming and live with us and stuff. But that my mother's death was the real huge fracture, like a soul fracture of where I really get to see how I took food and it became everything. It was filling that hole. And even before my mother died, no matter how poor we were, no matter how much we struggled financially, whether it's holes in our shoes or whatever, we got a treat every night. Out of all the kids in the family, our family, we went to the variety store. And it wasn't like my mom scraped together some flour and water and sugar and made us little something to eat. We went to the store and got a nice size ice cream cones every night. So when my mother was asked about that, you know, my brother actually asked my mother, how come we don't have sheets on our beds? But, you know, but we get ice cream cones. And in her, I guess, I don't know if you want to call it disdain or her righteous indignation or whatever you want to call it, she just looked down on him and said, because that's what I can give you. So the two main things in my life that I got consistently were treats and religion, and what a combination. So when you were sick, you were allowed to be on the sofa and you got treats. You were treated, you know, you got the 7-Up and you got the treats. When you were, I lost what I was going to say. We got treats when we were sick. Oh, and say a prayer and you'll feel better. We weren't taken to the doctors, and that had probably a lot to do with why my mom died, because she didn't go to the doctors. But so here we are, And here I am. I have this soul fracture. That's all I know how to do is go to food, go to junk, go to sugar. And I was lost. We were lost. You know, all of us were lost when she died. And so then, so talk about shame. I felt shame because my mom died. Everybody else had a mom. My mom was heavy and she never left the house. So I kind of had shame for that. I had shame for my one sibling, one of us at the bottom four who was heavy and a rager. And because he was bad, he was always in the house. So I felt shame for that. So I took on all kinds of shame, like whether it belonged to me or not. And I was the one that I was like more like the lost child. I was invisible. I was number seven and I did my rocking and sucking my thumb or I was out of the house and I learned to hang with the groups and get that feeling of love or that attention from outside. Well, you know, here we are now. My mom dies. I'm a young teenager and I fall for the first guy that's nice to me. And I get pregnant and I hide it. Of course I hide it. I'm a good Catholic girl. You don't do that. You don't do that. And so then here I am hiding this. And to make a long story short, it's not until I'm almost due where the school says, you know, calls me in this sneaky way into the nurse and sees that I am. And next thing I know, I'm off to St. Vincent's home. And I give this child up for adoption. But I come right back home. You know, it was during it actually, she was born December 18th. So it was right by the Christmas break of school. And I went right back to school, junior year in school, like nothing had happened. It wasn't discussed. We didn't talk about it. So that was in me all those years. That's another huge part of my personal shame. And then within a very short period of time, not long too long after that, that was in 1970. Let's just say this, by the time 1979 came, I had already had five more children. And I was married to the young guy that, you know, this teenage marriage, I was a mess, a total mess. So there was all kinds of shame in my life. So we're supposed to be talking about healing shame, but I needed to just give you some examples of the kind of shame I lived with. And most of those years, I wasn't overweight, but I was overweight, but not right away. It didn't happen till later. When I was very young and having all those kids, I literally, that was at the very worst of my addiction. I literally lived on caffeine, nicotine, sugar, soda, tea, caffeinated tea. I was a crazy raging mom of all these little babies with no support from my teenage husband. Bills weren't paid, the humiliation, the fear of them kicking us out of the house. I finally moved back home to my father's and ended up getting a divorce and everything and ended up going back to school. And that's where I started to get all my approval from outside of myself in terms of going back to school, getting an education, doing all things that are good for us and help us. But by the time I got to program, and by that point I had a career, I got a master's degree, I was making incredible, for me, a nice size amount of money, not an incredible amount of money, but I was alone. I had dated a little while in there and that relationship fell apart. My husband did leave me for another woman. That's what made me finally leave. It wasn't him not taking care of the kids. It wasn't him, you know, it was finally me having a legitimate excuse to get out, which was him cheating on me. So here I am. I move back home. I crawl myself my way out of all that. And I spend years alone. That's where the weight really came on, because now I'm still feeding it, trying desperately to believe that I'm worthy when I don't feel worthy. My history doesn't say I'm worthy. I may have earned that degree on the wall, but I still don't believe it's mine. I own it. You know, that somehow I just sneaked my way through it. It's a shame what we do with shame. So at this point, I'm what's what I found out with shame is it's not just that it's encapsulated and it's inside us and we just live with it and it's a burden like this. I have a lump on my shoulder that, you know, it's like a, I don't know, little jelly thing here. It's not like that. Shame ends up being outward with bitterness, you know, with all those things I mentioned before. And with me, with shame comes blame. So it wasn't just the food. You know, when they say, how did your food, one of the questions in the four step are 12 and 12. In what ways have I berated myself and my achievements? How have I felt about my body and my intimacy? In what ways have I compared myself to others? And where has shame been a factor in my life? You know, what my shame affected everybody else. I was alone. I was totally, by that point, my only relationship was with my kids. I went from everything was everybody else's fault, whether it was how I was raised and how poor I was, to how hard I had to work on my own, my husband leaving me, having to go to school and do all that work. I can go on and on and on at how it was everybody else's fault. I have a completely typical background of how hard it was someone else's fault. So I spent so much time talking about, I didn't want to go into a shame-a-log like that, but so how do we heal it? Well, first of all and foremost, in our for today from January 19th, if you suffer from shame like I do, I highly recommend reading this over and over again because it's absolutely important. The quote at the top, I have never seen a person grow or change in a constructive direction when motivated by guilt, shame, and/or hate. Okay? I have never seen a person grow or change in a constructive direction when motivated by guilt, shame, and/or hate. So I may have had a degree. I may have been making decent money, but I could not be in relationship. I was holding way, way too much baggage and bitterness. And I love the false pride, learning how the false pride and all of these things, I learned it through doing the steps. I had to admit that I was powerless over food, and I had to admit that I was filled with all this shame and bitterness, and that I didn't know how to be in a relationship. I had to admit the unmanageability of my life in step two, that I was 60 pounds or more heavier. I was alone. My relationship was food. And I needed a power. I had false pride. I had false pride in my life. And that's a false power. I was woman, hear me roar. I was self-sufficient. And I had all the self-knowledge in the world, but it did not, I was stuck. I was totally stuck. So I had to do in learning these things and taking the steps and seeing what my resentments were, like poverty, I just kept going. That second column, I couldn't just fit it in one little block. I had to keep writing and writing all the ways poverty, I had resentment over poverty. And the self-pity and the self-righteousness. So I had to do the steps. I had to trust God. I didn't trust God. In step three, when a sponsor asked me, is there anything you don't trust God with? I said, yeah, I don't trust God with getting me into a relationship without somebody's going to hurt me. I didn't realize I had to get a relationship with myself before I could get in a relationship with someone else. Healing the shame. I had to look at myself first. I had to take care of me. I had to learn how to do self-care. Step five, when I was able to sit and tell somebody right in front of their face out loud that I gave that child up for adoption, when I was able to say that, and when I was able to say all the other things I did, all the things to someone else and who did not look at me cross-eyed, she didn't go, she did nothing. She just heard me. Her reaction was complete and total warmth, acknowledgement, kindness, acceptance. That's how this program works when you work these steps. And then step six, for once I was able to see what shame did to me, all the bitterness, the self-pity, as I said, the self-justification was a big one. The rationalization, seeing how I had such expectations. I put a circle like this is because when you do the steps in the OA 12 steps workbook with a group, they tell you to put like a positive sign inside those that you circle. And expectations was huge for me. I had so many expectations, and that's why I got bitter, because I expected people to behave a certain way. I expected them to treat me a certain way. And guess what? I wasn't treating myself the way I wanted people to treat me. And so then I got to step six and I was really wanting higher power to remove these defects in order for me not to feel the shame, but I had to let them go. You know, what was I getting out of the shame? What did I get out of that? And each step of the way, the shame diminished as I put the food down and the weight came off. When I was put the food down and my temperament changed, because I wasn't constantly feeding that addiction that constantly left me restless, irritable, and discontented. All of a sudden, I was able to get through a day and not be thrown into emotional spasms from eating things that I'm literally allergic to.
That's 10 minutes.
Thank you. And so I had to. So I'm at step seven. I'm asking God to remove these. And in step six, I can't do it myself. You know, I told you, I know it. I know God. I'm fine. I got this, you know, I love that one. I got this, it's okay. I wasn't fine. And what I learned, the biggest thing that I learned is allowing the love in. I kept thinking other people had to change. In reality, that's all I had to do was let go of the control of other people and open myself up and let higher power in, even if it was just a teeny tiny bit. And when I let higher power in, it allowed me to be able to look, to have a more clear look at my defects and the humiliation I was causing myself. And instead of the humility, you know, I was confusing the two. So then I get to step eight. And I will be honest with you, in the beginning of working my steps, there were people that I was not able to make amends to, like my ex-husband, his girlfriend, the one he left me for. I didn't even think of that back then. So, you know, we work this program as we have to. You know, I didn't think I owed him an amends. I never thought I did. And it wasn't until I continued to keep working the steps that those kind of things all fell away. That's what happens in program. We don't graduate. We just keep working it because we want to keep growing. So we're like, we really are this onion or this flower that keeps growing and reblooming every year. And so in step nine, I had to be able to make amends. And a lot of my amends, because of the poverty, even to my ex-boyfriend, were financial amends. And so it cost a lot of money. But it was the most beautiful, talk about lifting shame, to be able to give back to people who helped you, to do it with love, kindness, really incredible gratitude, and getting the help from sponsors, from people in the fellowship, to be able to pay it back and not say something, to not get caught up in the old relationship, to just be able to be grateful and say thank you. In step 10, doing this work every day, you know, I do its 10-step journal. I use the Region 7 journal every night. And I noticed that I almost never anymore have resentments I have to fill in. I don't have jealousies that I have to fill in. And even if I have a resentment, I'll write it anyway, but it's usually I'll start to think it and right away program reminds me, Mary, what do you need to change in yourself? I don't have control of other people. And then step 11, realizing that, realizing, of course, the step is going to go right out of my head at this second, but it's only the knowledge of God's will for us. only the knowledge of God's will for us and the power to carry that out. That kind of skipped over me for a long time. I didn't realize that that's what I was supposed to be praying for. So there's been a lot of times where I'm, jostling along with God. And in step 12 is service. And how can I give service to someone if I'm still filled with shame and bitterness? As I do want to say that I've been able, through the program, through also, and as it says in our program, if we need therapy or whatever, I've definitely had to do that to deal with a lot of my personal things. But in terms of the 12 steps, there's nothing, to me, there's no problem in the world that you can't work out through doing it, taking them through the 12 steps, or through a 4-step inventory, or a six-step process. And to be able to really look at why we hold on to things and how to let them go, and understanding why and giving myself a break. And it's not about me beating myself up. As I said, that allowing the love in, that meant I had to learn loving discipline. I didn't like the word discipline. I was very defiant and rebellious in many ways, but you wouldn't know it to see me. You would think I had to just be the good girl, but I knew how to be a sneak and I was a liar. And these are words I had to learn. I didn't think I was a liar or a sneak. I thought that I was just this good little girl. So program gave me these words, and our literature can give us these words. That workbook I told you about gives you a lot of definitions of words. So if you don't know how to put a word to how you're behaving or how you're feeling, you can look at that glossary.
5 minutes.
Thank you. And so I'm now I can give service. I can be patient with people. I don't have expectations. I've had it in the past. I've learned I can't control a sponsee. It's not my job, that I'm just a guide. But service is very important. I'm very involved in my, I've been going to 2 meetings a week all this time, all these years. They're considered my home meetings. I'm sponsored. My sponsor is sponsored. And I go to any length. I have to go to any length to heal. Remember the word healing. Think of the word mercy. You know, in mercy, there should be love and healing and forgiveness. And so that forgiveness part is really hard when we're dealing with old relationships, especially whether it's ex-girlfriends and things like that. And my amends with her really was thanking her. She was actually on her deathbed and thanking her for all the years that I had kids that lived under her roof and my grandkids that lived under her roof. And she had been in my life through family gatherings and all that stuff. But that reality of letting that go, I can't stress enough how many years that pain, that anger, that bitterness drove me, filled me. And I owned it. I don't own it. Today, I work really hard at not owning my intergenerational shame, not owning shame that belongs to someone else, and to not shame myself, and to constantly remind myself I'm enough. I have enough. I have everything I need. Higher power. I am a child, a beautiful child of my higher power, who I call God. And today, my... today I'm grounded, I'm calm emotionally, I'm patient, I'm secure, I work my steps, I'm accepting, I can be helpful, I can be trusted. I now trust. I didn't trust anyone. I can do that today. I'm married, I'm happily married now for 12 or something years now. And I met someone in program, and that was a gift. But I had to learn. I needed a lot of help to be in relationship. And I first had to do it with myself. And the steps will give you that life and will help you see yourself, heal yourself, as long as you let higher power in to do that. Thanks for letting me share.